Welcome to The Tool Shed, a podcast covering all aspects of fantasy baseball to help you win all of your fantasy leagues. From the MLB draft all the way to the show, we're here to help give you the edge in your dynasty leagues. Now, here are your hosts, Eric Cross and Chris Clegg.
Welcome in to episode 213 of The Tool Shed with Clegg and Cross, powered by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm your host, Eric Cross, and with me, as usual, is my 80-grade co-host, Mr. Chris Clegg. Chris, what's going on, bud?
Not much. I just got back from a game with the two-year-old, so he did good. I was impressed. My wife had something going on, and it's going to be me and Hayden, so I figured, why not drop 10 minutes down to the ballpark and just see how he does. So it was the fastest game ever. I was there an hour and saw six innings. So that's or five innings. Yeah, five innings. Still pretty impressive to see five innings in an hour. Well, let's see. They're right at the 2 hour mark right now. The game first pitch was 7:05. It's in the bottom of the eighth. So it didn't quite get under 2 hours, but still moving pretty good. But Isaac Coffey's the oddest pitcher that I've seen. He's so good. It's bizarre. He throws 88 to 90, but really good. But anyway, topic for another day. We're going to talk some players to sell in dynasty leagues. It's going to be a fun episode, I think. So looking forward to it.
What is it with the Red Sox and drafting guys with the last name Coffey?
They got two guys with the last name Coffey in last year's class.
I know. It's very weird. I don't know. It's just kind of odd. I don't know. But yeah, Isaac Coffey kind of coming on the scene this year. Yeah, I looked at him a bit earlier this year. He's very weird. But I was at a game similar to that. But what you were just saying about how quick it was, I think it was either the first, second game of the year up here back in mid-April. And it was somewhere where it was like first half of the game just flew by. I'm like, dude, we're going to get something like an hour and a half. And then like the sixth inning or whatever kind of dragged on a bit. But yeah, it's good. Just when you get kids with you, because, you know, I have to bring my kids with me to like half the games I go to pretty much, especially during the weeknight games. Makes it a little easier in a little bit when school gets out and I don't have to worry about getting home, you know, for 8 o'clock or whatever, get them in bed. I can say, all right, you know, you don't have to go to school the next day. Who cares?
Y'all's games are nice because they start at 6 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Every game here is 7:05, which is kind of annoying. I'd love a 6 o'clock start personally.
They used to do a thing where they shifted to 7. I don't know if they still do that. Let me see if they do that again this year. In the past, they used to shift them to 7, kind of like once school got out. When school gets out up here in about a couple of weeks. So let's see. Look at the schedule here. Do they do that again this year? I don't think they did that. I think they stopped doing it last year, if I recall. And now the schedule's not loading. So never mind on that. But yeah, as Chris mentioned, we are going over some dynasty sell highs. We got a good little mix of major league guys and some prospects. A lot of, you know, a lot of fun names. Maybe a couple surprises later on in the show. But all these names that we are looking to sell high, or just maybe to sell in general. Right now in dynasty leagues, we talked some buys last week, so if we figured we'd go on the flip side, talk some sells. But before we get into the show, the usual housekeeping. You can find us on Twitter, Chris is at RotoClegg. I'm EricCross04. Show is at ToolShedPod. If you enjoy the podcast, please write and review. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms, Chris's Substack and my Patreon, for more work for each of us, including our prospect and dynasty rankings. All right, Chris, let's do it here. How many names do we have on the list? 10, 12, 10. 10 names on the list, and Chris is going to start out with a pretty fun one right off the bat.
Well, we're going to do Christopher Morel together, right? Just kind of.
Oh, yeah, I kind of skipped over that part, yeah. So Christopher Morel, yeah, the low-hanging fruit, as you said earlier.
Yeah.
But I just tweeted that about like 10 minutes ago, that over his last, seven games, 2-for-22, no home runs, and 10 strikeouts just after his home run barrage where he had five games in a row with a home run, 7 and 8, and then 9 home runs in like 12 games or whatever it was to start a season. So, but hey, not surprising when he was killing the ball, the metrics were still as bad as they were last year, or maybe even worse in some areas. So not surprising at all that he's going on this really cold stretch now.
Yeah, I think he's going to be one that's constantly just up and down. It's very Javi Baez-ish, like that kind of profile. And even when he was tearing up AAA, he was still struggling with strikeouts. He struck out 30.6% of the time, which is, you know, obviously not great in AAA. His zone contact was 73%. Chase rate was 34.5%. Overall contact, 64%. And then you obviously see him in the majors and what he's done. And contact at 58% right now in the majors. That's so bad. Chasing it 40% of the time. Like, it was awesome. Like, it was an awesome start. I hope you sold high before his recent rough stretch. But like I said, this is like the biggest no-brainer sell. If you still can, like, somebody looks at the stat line and says, oh man, he's still hitting 282 and slugging 704 and has 9 home runs and 75 plate appearances. Maybe, just maybe, can you pawn him off? But I just think the inconsistency and the volatility in this profile is one that I just don't want to have to deal with for fantasy purposes. So I'd rather just get off of him if you can and sell him.
Yeah, I never, ever, ever have invested in this profile, and I never will. This is just too streaky of a profile. And like I mentioned, his plate discipline metrics are even worse than last year. And they were already pretty damn bad last year. See, the zone contact was 65.2, now 63.6. Chase went from 28.6 to 36.7. Whiff 38.3 to 43.7%. You know, it's not good. Walk rate from, what was it, 8.9 to 5.3. K rate 32.2 to 38.7. Yeah, like, the quality of contact is great. You know, almost a 24% barrel rate. Average EV is 93 miles an hour. Max EV is 113.5. Hard hit rate of 57%. Like, I get it. Like, the dude can absolutely pummel the ball, and he was in AAA as well. I think he's probably up to like 22, 23 home runs combined between the two levels this year. So that's great and all. And he can steal a bag here and there. He's got 11 and 500 plate appearances overall. So this is a guy that could probably go 25, 10 over the course of a full season, but it's just so much volatility. And I guess it comes down to, maybe he has a little more value in, you know, roto formats as opposed to head to head. But again, this is like, we saw how the bottom can fall out so quickly. Yeah, Baez was fun, but Baez is still a fun player, especially you watch him play the field. He's a fun player. But we saw how this profile is not maintainable year over year, at least to be an impact player. Now Baez is, you know, someone that nobody really wants at all this year. So, and I think Morel is, I think, has even more. I have to go back and look at some of Javi's early career metrics, but I feel like Morel's even, like, these issues are even more profound for him. So, yeah, I want nothing to do with him. Chris said, if you could still sell him for whatever, you know, I probably would, or maybe wait for him to go on a hot streak. Maybe that's the best course of action. Maybe wait for him to go on another hot streak, which is probably going to come. You know, probably have like this, you know, 3-week stretch in July or something where he, you know, pummels 10 more home runs, but definitely not a profile I want to, you know, hitch up my wagon to, so to speak. Is that still a saying? Hitch your wagon to that? Yeah, something like that. So. I think that's an old, I'm not showing my age now. But yeah, so Morel, easy one. We wanted to start off the show with him. And now we'll go into the individual players that we put on the list here, starting with Chris.
This ain't going to be popular by any means, but I'm going to suggest that you cash out on Cody Bellinger. I know this won't be a popular take at all, especially there's a lot of fellow Cubs fans out there. Obviously, he's injured right now. He had that knee injury on probably the catch of the year. Like, I just happened to be watching that game live. Like, I don't know. I was just flipping around MLB TV one night, and it was like that play happened like right when I clicked over to the Cubs game. I was like, what just happened? Like, it was like such an amazing catch. And then he hurt his knee. I know right now it says he's scheduled to hit in the cage and throw. That was supposed to happen this Tuesday. I'm not sure. But anyway, there's been a lot of hype with the resurgence of Cody Bellinger. Certainly been encouraging to see. I mean, he hit 7 home runs, stole 9 bases in 163 plate appearances. Counting stats have been awesome. And he's always been a counting stat guy. Like, even when he was pretty bad last year, he hit 19 home runs, stole 14 bases. Obviously, he was on pace to shatter that. Hopefully, he, you know, gets back healthy. But when I'm looking at the profile, it's like, okay, I'm looking at an improved contact rate by about 3-4%. That's good. He's still, I mean, it's respectable, like 79%. His own contact of 82% is fine. Chasing at 32% of the time as well. Like, there's been some tangible improvements with this profile. Home run to fly ball is right in line with where it has been in the past, but oddly enough, like, he's not hitting the ball as hard. So, like, contact, good. Like, you love to see that. You love to see an improved approach, walking more, striking out less. Like, all that has led to him being much improved in that area of his batting average and slash line. But then you look at the hard hit data and it's like, like this is odd. Like Bellinger's a player that hits the ball hard normally. But since that massive season in 2019 when he won MVP, he has not hit the ball hard. And actually, his average exit velocity is down to 86.9 miles an hour. For reference, his career, he's like a right around 89. Last year was 89.4. The year before that, 89.3. His best year was 91.1. He's not hitting the ball hard at all. He is hitting ideal launch angles, about 16 degrees. You like to see that. Barrel rate's just at 6%. Like, that's the lowest of his career. And hard hit rate of 31.9%. So a lot of the metrics kind of suggest that maybe he's overperformed a bit. Like his X slug, like I don't get really into X stats a lot. They have their places, but I think sometimes we're quick to overuse them. But his X slug is like well below. So his slug is 493, his X slug's 401. I don't know exactly what Bellinger's going to do the rest of the season, but I guess there's probably going to be regression. And I think there's the hype's probably not where it was pre-injury, but there's still a lot of hype. And especially when he comes back, like when he's ready to return to the field, there may be a lot of hype and you can sell him. So I think I would do that personally if I could. I think Bellinger's going to be fine. I think he's going to give you power and speed, but I think you're probably going to see the average probably tail off a bit moving forward. And I think you can probably cash out at peak value right now.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely on board with that. Bellinger, again, he's just a guy that's going to be super streaky. Like we've seen, obviously, the talent is there at times, and you know, he hit for power, he can run a little bit, but yeah, it's just too much inconsistency in the profile. And that's kind of the similar thing to this next guy, which might shock people that I'm going to say this name, but I'm going with Jared Kelenic for my first one here. And I think there's a, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like the perception with Kelenic is like, oh, he's gotten better this year. You know, basically across the board, he really hasn't. Better quality of contact for sure. Like that is the one area where he absolutely has improved. You know, he's hitting exit velocity is 5.5 miles an hour better. Hard hit rate about that was a 14% better, 13.8 up to 48.8%. But he's still striking out 31.5% of the time. Walk rate's dipped a little bit as well. Still has a whiff rate well above 40%. On, you know, breaking balls and off speed, which is the same thing he did last year. He's pummeling fastballs. Like that's not an issue here, but still whiffing way too much. You know, zone contact has improved a little bit, but it's still well below league average. You know, whiff rate still well worse than league average. So same with, you know, chase contact, contact in general. So I feel like he's just going to be another one that's just going to have this, you know, a lot of streakiness to him. He's that's what he's done this year. Like he started off really hot and everyone jumping back on board. Then he had a cold stretch and a little mini hot stretch again. So end of the year, maybe he's at, you know, 25-10 or something like that. But again, this is just not a profile. And I want to have a lot of shares in. Like actually, you know, it's not surprising, but I don't have a lot of shares of Kelenic right now. I think I might have had maybe one or two in each three draft in Dynasty. Not much, like barely any at all. So I just don't like these inconsistent players. It's just they're maddening to roster. So I think right now you can probably get a, you know, a more reliable, you know, maybe a back end top 100 dynasty player right now that's a much safer profile than Kelenic. And I'd probably, you know, get on board with that. So I'll go sell high on Jared Kelenic.
Wow, Eric.
I feel dirty, but, you know, had to do it.
Go wash your hands and then come back and get your next player. You might feel dirty about him too, but we'll save that for a minute. This one was probably the lowest hanging fruit for me. And it's like this is probably the most obvious one, but if you have somebody in your league that just looks at stat lines, you might be able to cash out on Bryce Elder of my Atlanta Braves. He's 24 years old. So it's like, he just turned 24. He's young, but it's like the results have been awesome. I think he may have the best ERA of starters right now at 1.92. I would have to look to confirm that, and I'm going to. But he's pitched so good. And he keeps dominating, like, really good teams, oddly enough. And I'm just not buying any of this. Yeah, he's the lowest ERA among qualified starters right now. Bryce Elder, 1.92 ERA. This comes with a 4.15 xERA because he allows a lot of hard contact. And a 3.42 FIP. Now, I don't think Elder's just going to like flop and just be terrible. I don't think we see him regress to, like, I don't know, a 4 ERA. I mean, even last year, like, in Atlanta, he was a 3.17 ERA. So there's some value to be had here, but he's not best ERA in baseball good. And I think most people know that. Like, this is common sense, but doesn't strike out a lot of guys. He's running an 11% swing strike rate right now. He actually gets hit rather hard. Like, you look and he's allowing a lot of hard contact. His average exit velocity against is 91.1 miles an hour, 7% barrel rate against. He does induce ground balls, which that certainly helps. So when he's at his best, like, he's keeping the ball on the ground. So obviously that's going to help you out when you don't miss bats. If you can keep the ball on the ground, he's doing that at a 57.6% rate, which is obviously really good. But I just don't see this profile sustaining at all. I mean, we're looking at a sinker below 90 miles an hour. His four seam sits at 90.6 miles an hour on average. The sinker has a 322 batting average against. His four seam has a 333 batting average against. It's baffling that he's not allowed more runs. Looking at this profile, he has benefited from a lower BABIP. I mean, his BABIP is below. It's not terribly low at 291, but it is below, like, MLB average. His strand rate, that's the biggest thing, 87.4%. Strand rate is a stat that basically, like, it's just going to be, like, unless you just have an odd year, like Robbie Ray did that one monster year. He had, like, a 90% strand rate. Those just don't sustain generally. And so I think that we're going to see Elder have some regression hit. Everybody knows it. Like, people know that he's going to regress. But you look, he's dominated the Dodgers and the Mariners and the Blue Jays. Like, yeah, he faced Oakland in his last start, but the three starts before that was Toronto, Seattle, and Los Angeles, and Baltimore before that. So, like, these are good lineups that he's pitched well against. So sell what he's done, sell the teams that he's beat, and cash out if you can. I'd look, like, so if I was selling, like, hypothetically, if I was selling Bryce Elder in a dynasty league, what would I want in return? I think that's helpful to talk about too. Like, and maybe we can go back and mention, like, what we would look for if we sold these guys. It'd probably helpful for the listeners. So Bryce Elder, if I sold him, I'd try to get, like, a top 150 dynasty asset. I don't know if you can do that or not. Like, I don't have Elder anywhere, so it may be hard for me to do, but, like, let's just see. If maybe I need to shoot a little bit lower, but would I trade Bryce Elder for William Contreras? Probably.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah, if you could do that. Would I trade Bryce Elder for Jordan Montgomery? Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the range you're looking at, like a Jordan Montgomery range. Like, obviously, Justin Steele's hurt now, so that stinks, but I trade him for Marcus Stroman. Like, those are guys, like, in the 150 to 200 range that I have pitcher-wise. I think I'd do that.
Yeah, no, that's pretty fair. And going back to, what would you look for in Morel? Like, would you aim top 100 with, I don't know, is that maybe a little too high, maybe 150? Like, I'm trying to see who would be some, probably, you know, go for a hitter here. Who are some hitters like that one in the 150 range? Like, maybe a Royce Lewis or something like that is in that range.
Yeah, I'm afraid that. Yeah, I mean, if you could get Royce, like, I'd absolutely do that. I'm not sure you could, like, there's a lot of hype with Royce returning, homer in his first game. I'm trying to think of, like, somebody that struggled. Like, would you trade Morel for Andrés Giménez? Giménez is not good.
I don't know, man. It's like, right now, you know, answering just by going up my rankings say yes,
yeah.
But I don't want Giménez. Like, I was off of him in the preseason. I just don't. I mean, granted, he's been much worse than even I thought he would be. But
right,
maybe what about like, I don't know, like a Ty France, Andrew Vaughn? What about Andrew Vaughn?
I'm just not in on Vaughn at all. Like, just the profile's just not fantasy friendly. But I would trade him for, like, Nico Horner.
I was just looking at Nico as well. He's right in this range for me too.
Yeah, that's a good name. Like, Ian Happ. Like, I think Happ's going to be better rest of the season. Like, I've got Chris Bryant and Carlos Correa sitting around there. Like,
same.
Got to think those are ones that you would make the move for. Would you trade him for Estery Ruiz?
I mean, two like very, very flawed but in different ways profiles.
It's like if you need speed.
I know. Ruiz is like a cheat code. Like, I only have him in maybe a couple weeks, but like in my home keeper league, I have really good outfield. So basically, I look at who I'm – it's a head-to-head league too. It's a, my only head-to-head league I have left. But I look to see who I'm facing that week. And like, all right, is this team good at steals? All right, let's plug Ruiz in this week. Are they not good at steals? All right, let's bench him and put in whoever else. And if I need more power. But he's like a kind of a weird little cheat code with all his speed. What's he have, like 28 steals already or something like that? Jeez. It's insane. But yeah, I think that's the range. Like that 125 to 150 range. Maybe you can get, if there's a Cubs fan in your league, maybe you can get top 100. But
yeah,
I see. Maybe you can get as high as... Oh, here's a fun one, because this guy was like 50-ish preseason. He's fallen right around 100 for me. What about Dalton Varsho?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, Varsho obviously is going to tank in value with not having the catcher eligibility next year. But in general, like I like Varsho a little bit more. I think he's just more consistent. And though we haven't seen that this year, I would say that he's going to be more consistent in the long run.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And as for Kelnick, after I aim, I'd aim top 100 for Kelnick. Like, if I could flop him for, who's a guy in my back end top 100? You know, like a Gleyber Torres is in that range. You know, maybe if Miguel Vargas, someone like that. I don't know if you can get Josh Jung right now. Maybe like a C.S. Suzuki. I think that's like the ballpark I'd be looking at for Kelnick.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I would shoot for like top, you probably could have got top 75 value a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
I'd say now if you get top 100 value, I'd be happy. If you're selling Cody Bellinger, I'd shoot really high. Like I'd shoot for like at least top 75 value. I think you could get that.
Maybe you can get like an Eloy Jimenez for Bellinger. You know, yeah. I still have Jimenez right around 50. I think maybe people are lower than that on him for the most part, but people are just kind of tired of him being injured, and I get it. But yeah, that could be a good little. I had the idea that somebody, I forget where, somebody when I was mentioning Morel a few weeks ago, saying like, "Oh, I won't even trade him for Eloy Jimenez right now." I'm like, "What?" Mm. Yeah, someone came up in my dynasty league and offered me Eloy Jimenez for Morel. I'd be, "Yep, thank you."
Smash accept. Yeah.
Smash. Double smash accept.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Where are we at? We got my next guy, right? Yeah, okay. So I'm going to go with the Red Sox now and go with Alex Verdugo. I think there's like a misconception that he's just like a lot better this year. He's not. Like the metrics are like pretty similar to where he's always been. You know, barrel rate, 6-7%. Exit velo, you know, 89 or so miles an hour. Hard hit rate in the upper 30s. You know, obviously the plate discipline is very good. Like, I'm not saying he's bad, that he's going to fall off a cliff, but I think the perceived value took a bigger jump than it should this year just because he was hitting well. I mean, he still is. Like, so on the season, he's hitting 290, 364, 449, 5 home runs, 3 steals in 231 plate appearances. But he scored a lot of runs early in the season. Like, that Red Sox offense was, like, for the month of April, was very, very good. Like, one of the top 5 offense in baseball. But they have majorly cooled off. Like the last 30 days, they are a bottom 10, bottom 12 offense or so. And then the last 2 weeks, they're a bottom 5 offense. And, you know, I kind of saw this coming. Like, I didn't think they're going to be top 5 offense all season. So I think it's that hot stretch for Boston in general kind of elevated Verdugo a bit. And again, I think he's still a solid player, but I feel like he's jumped considerably higher than he probably should have in dynasty rankings just because, you know, he's, the power speed is very limited with him. It always has been. It always will be. Like, he's got kind of middle of the road average power, but that ballpark, as we've said a million times before, limits left-handed pull power. And he's not a guy that goes the other way over the monster. So, like, his career high is 13. This year, he's on pace for, you know, right around there, 13, 14, 15 or so. I don't really see him ever getting to the point where he's like 20 to 25. Doesn't run much at all. He's got 3 this year. I'd be willing to bet we never see him get the double digit steals. So looking at a guy that's like capped at 15 and 10, you know, with a good average, you know, last he's been over 280 each of the last 5 years, including this year. So if that's what you want from him, sure. I mean, again, I think he's a fine player. I think he's a solid player. Like, he's the epitome of solid, but the perceived value, which is, you know, everything in dynasty leagues, has gone way too high on Verdugo. So I'd probably be looking to, you know, if I can get a top 100 guy for him, I absolutely would. If I can get, you know, some of those guys we were just mentioning for, you know, Kelenic and Bellinger in that range, I think you start there and see what you can get, and maybe drop it down a little bit. But I think you can get a, you know, pretty good player for Verdugo right now, or maybe someone has a bit more upside and maybe a bit more impact potential than he offers. So I'd be looking to sell Verdugo right now.
You have him ranked out of curiosity.
I have him ranked. Whoops. Help if I didn't put Verdugo and added an R in there. I have him 167 still. Like he was 250. Yeah. He was 258 in my April rankings, which was, you know, probably too low. I'll admit that.
Yeah.
But and maybe this is too low still. Maybe it is. But I have him for hitters in his range. Like, oh, here's a good one. If you had Verdugo, Chris, someone comes up and offers you Taylor Ward, preseason darling Taylor Ward. Yeah. Well, actually, I have five spots ahead at 162. Would you take that?
Yep.
I would too.
Much prefer Taylor Ward. He's heating up. It's time.
Yep. What about, I'm just seeing another guy that's kind of fallen a bit. Most of these guys haven't fallen in this range. Oh, here's a weird one. What about Tyler O'Neill?
Dude, if O'Neill got traded out of St. Louis, then I'd be all over him. Like,
yeah,
ship him to Atlanta. That'd be awesome. But it's close. I mean, my rankings, let's see where I have. I think I dropped O'Neill pretty substantially.
As was warranted.
I mean, I've got him within 10 spots. I actually have Verdugo ahead. So the rankings say yes to keep Verdugo, but I think that's a good offer to consider.
Well, last one, I saw another name. This guy's fallen a bit too. And if you were looking for a catcher, Alejandro Kirk, who's had a kind of a rough year, would you take Kirk over Verdugo?
I don't think so. I think with catchers, I'd rather stick with Verdugo. I'm looking, like, I'd take Lars Nootbaar, like that kind of range. Like, I would try to buy low on like Spencer Torkelson with Verdugo.
That's another one I was looking at Tristan Cassis too.
Yep.
I have Cassis five spots below, or six spots below, 173, but that might be, you know, a good spot to capitalize on a buy low from Tristan Cassis too, who I believe I mentioned I mentioned him last episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, pretty sure I did. It's hard to remember sometimes, but yeah. So if I could sell a Verdugo for a Cassis right now, I'd probably do that.
Yeah, I like that.
All right, who's next on the list here? Right. We go over to, now we get a couple of arms with the same last name.
So you can take a gander on who has the same last name, and it's Josiah Gray, and you probably know who the next one is now. Josiah Gray's been really good this year, actually. In 11 starts, he has a 2.77 ERA, which is certainly great to see. Probably the best thing about him is that he's limiting the home runs, which is huge. Last year, he just got obliterated on home runs. He allowed 38 home runs last year, which is absolutely nuts. He has allowed six this year, but just to kind of give you a reference point, last year was 2.3 home runs per nine. This year is 0.88 home runs per nine. So pretty big difference there. Gray is striking out just 19% of batters, though, which is down from about 5 percentage points from last year, which is a bit discouraging. He's walking 11.5%. So while the results have been there, his K-minus BB rate has dropped from 13.6, which is just, man, to 7.5%, which is pretty terrible. He's missing less bats, 10.7% swinging strike rate. He's throwing less first pitch strikes. He's allowing more contact. I don't know. I think this is a profile that's a pretty easy sell for me. What could you get for him? I guess that's the biggest question of, like, I don't know. What could you get? And what are people actually willing to pay for him? If you could sell his change in his arsenal, the fact that he's throwing the slider more, and he has a 31.4% whiff rate against it, he's added a cutter, which has been pretty solid overall, then maybe you could cash out and get something. The fastball velo is down. He's still allowing a lot of contact on it, a 311 batting average against on the four seam. So you don't like to see that. But I think you could get something for Gray. what I guess is the biggest question mark of what is it that you could get? I've got him ranked like 230 right now, which is hilarious because I have him ranked side by side with your guy who you're going to talk about. But I don't know what I would look to cash out and get. Maybe if you get a top 200 guy, then you do it. I don't know. Like, it's an interesting sell of like, do people actually like Josiah Gray? I don't know.
He's been a really weird one because he's always had the really good stuff, you know, good whiff rates on the breakers, but he just never was able to put it together. And now he's like, he is a little bit, but like you mentioned, some of the metrics are actually worse in some regards. So maybe he traded some, you know, and it wasn't like he had like a great K rate to begin with, and right. it's gone down. So yeah. And obviously I'm talking about John Gray, who I have these guys about 30 spots apart or so, right around 200 for each of them. John Gray at 187 and Josiah at 218. But I think we're playing with fool's gold here with John Gray. I mean, yeah, he's 10 starts. He's a 281 ERA. And I don't love, you know, like Chris, I don't love X stats, but his X ERA is 472 right now. His K rate is, if you look at for years, yes, he has pitched like a full year or a substantial amount, is the lowest of his career. His actual lowest, 12.6%. But that was back in 2020. Didn't pitch that much. He already has more pitches thrown this year than he did that year. So this is the lowest of his career by a good amount. Last 2 years, he's been around 24-25%. So in the fastball, is just getting absolutely clobbered right now. 310 batting average against, 563 slug, 408 wOBA. The only pitch he really can miss bats with is the slider, 37.5%. Changeup is actually okay, but the four-seamers is getting hit way too hard. He leaves it over the heart of the plate way too often. And he just doesn't have, like, if the slider's not there, like, he doesn't really have another pitch that he can go to get guys out. And the K rate has dropped because of it. You know, a lot of the plate discipline metrics aren't really that impressive either. He has a, you know, higher than league average zone contact rate. Whiff rate's right around league average. Chase rate is actually a little bit above. But I think that the perceived value of him has jumped a good amount this year. And I can kind of like with Verdugo, he's like, I think Gray can be solid. I've always kind of been a Gray guy a little bit here, but I just think the value has jumped way too high this year, more than it probably should have. And I think we're going to see him, you know, maybe not regress to a, you know, the XERA in the mid upper fours, but I don't really see this, like this profile. If you look at the profile without looking at the surface stats, which is something I like to do, like what does this profile like look like what should the overall line look like with a profile like this? And it's not a 2.81 ERA, I'll tell you that right now. More like maybe 3.81. And if he regresses back to, you know, 3.5 or higher while still having a lower than league average K rate, that's just not very impactful arm. So I think if you can use that surface ERA right now to sell high, maybe get a top 200, or you might even be able to go top 150, 175 range on him as a return, I probably would. Like if you could look to, let's see, who are some arms in that range? Oh, why is the first one I look at Alec Manoah? That's not a great one to start out with. But that is, like, if someone, you have John Gray, Chris, someone offers you Alec Manoah, are you taking that?
No, I don't know.
Manoah's like, no comment?
No, Manoah's been awful. And you got to think that he rebounds some. So it's like, definitely have to, you think about that. Like, yes, I probably would, but I couldn't take Manoah right now and start him.
No, absolutely not. Oh, here's a good one. A couple spots higher. I think Nestor Cortes. I definitely would go after Nestor Cortes. Yep. He's been kind of mad this year, but I think he's better than what he's been. So Blake Snell. This is a weird range of rankings. I don't. Would you go after Blake Snell for? Yeah, I think I probably would. He actually has looked a bit better outside of the blow up in Boston. He's looked a bit better over the last month or so. Now he's injured. This is a weird range of rankings. What about here's a duo back to back. Eber Cabrera, Reed Detmers. Would you take either of them for John Gray right now?
No.
No. Yeah, they are a little bit below, but
would I take Brayon Bello?
Dude, that's the next name I was gonna mention. He's like five spots below that. So what about like Trevor Rogers?
I think I'd probably Gray, but I think it's interesting.
I might do it just because I think there's a better chance that Rogers goes up from here than Gray does. So even though I have Rogers about 15-ish spots lower, I have Rogers at 200 on the dot, actually. So maybe I'd look to do that, or maybe Springs is hurt, Rasmussen's hurt, everyone's hurt, McCullers is hurt. Somebody hurt guys in this range, but yeah. So anyway, yeah, I would look to sell John Gray there. And now we go over to, we have four prospect names now, starting with another Red Sox for Chris.
Yeah, this one, and the buzz may have fallen off a bit, but I still see the name thrown out there a lot. And I saw this guy a lot early in the season before he got promoted, and that's Chase Meadroth, who is an interesting little player. And I say that because he's very small. Like, he's listed at 5'9". He's stocky. Like, he's short, stocky, like, interesting profile. Very good feel to hit here. So you got to give him that. Like, Meadroth was, like, flying up rankings early in the year. Like, soaring. And, like, I saw it. I mean, he made contact very consistently. Like, I saw him hit a bomb out to dead center, and dead center at Floor Field in Greenville is 420 feet. So, like, it was a pretty good shot. But I think it was Jeff Ponce who described him best as he's like a Brock Holt type player. Like, he's a utility guy.
And I love Brock Holt, though. Like, Brock Holt is like royalty in Boston for being a utility guys that would fill in here and there when there was an injury. People love Brock Holt, though, but I don't know. It's random, but
yeah. I love Brock Holt. So the question is, like, is it a fantasy friendly profile? And I think So you have to think about that with everybody. So it's easy to look at a stat line of player, of a prospect especially, and be like, oh man, like, this guy's raking. But, like, what is the fantasy potential? Like, is he going to contribute for fantasy? And this just isn't a profile that's going to contribute any for fantasy, in my opinion. He exhibits a good walk rate. Like, he doesn't chase very often. He doesn't strike out. He puts the ball on the bat consistently. And yeah, there's been a bit of a drop off since he moved to Double A, but it's his first full season. He's 21 years old. I think he's a fine player, but I don't think that Chase Meadroth is a fantasy asset. Like, I don't, it would have to be like probably 400 player deep or 400 prospect deep for me to roster him. Just honestly, like, I just think there's better players with better upside. Like, even if I like Meadroth fine, I think he's a sell. Like, you could cash out and probably get a top 250 prospect with upside, and I do that. Like, if you could, I'd do it all day long. Like, or use that spot to pick up a hot name when the DSL starts next week and the complex starts next week. Like, just utilize it. Try to trade him right now. And if you can, like, I'd do so. And there's a lot of names I'd trade him for. Anybody all with right. just any upside, I'd trade. So if you can, sell Chase Meadroth.
Yep, absolutely. And, like, where does he fit in long-term? The Boston has so many, infield prospects that are ahead of him. I just don't see where he fits into this long-term plan here in Boston. So, yeah, definitely a good one there. I'm going to keep it in the AL East and go a guy. I know I've talked about him before, but it's pretty low-hanging fruit right now, and that's Aurelvis Martinez from Toronto. I mean, kind of, maybe not quite, but kind of like the Christopher Morel of the minor leagues, where it's just like, it can be exciting, but it's a very flawed profile. Like, he hit a little home run barrage in the month of May. He had 11 home runs and only 21 hits total. Like, dude, this does not hit singles, but even in the hot month, he still only hit .236 for the month and is hitting .179 for the season. And he's now been in Double A for 159 games, 659 plate appearances, and he is currently hitting .180, right basically where he's at this year, like .180 overall at the level. Like, this is not, a little bit higher than that. He's actually at, .197, but not a good profile for fantasy. Like, the power is there. Like, I've seen him take batting practice, seen him hit some tanks in games. Obviously, he's got 14 home runs this year in 41 games, 44 at the Double A level in 159 games with an ISO, right around 260. Like, power is there. It's nothing else is. Doesn't run much at all. Has zero attempts this year on the base paths. Has a .284 OBP. He doesn't even strike out that much. It's not a swing and miss issue for him. Like, his K rate is actually under 25% right now. And last year it got a bit high. Last year, but it was still only at 28.6. Not it's like really, really high. But it's not even a swing and miss issue with the Aroldis. It's just a making contact consistently issue for him. So he doesn't do that. He's a 30 grade hitter. And again, kind of like similar to like Meadro, like where does he fit in with Toronto? He's only played shortstop and third base, and they got Bo Bichette and Matt Chapman over there for the foreseeable future. I just don't see where he fits in. I don't think this is a bat that'll consistently let him hit major league pitching. I mean, he can't even hit Mendoza line in double A. So what's he going to do? Triple A, major leagues. I just don't see it outside of an occasional, like, what is he, best case scenario, Rougned Odor? Like now, Rougned Odor, not even like good Odor from like 7-8 years ago. I just don't see, there's so much more downside to this profile than upside outside of the power. If you can use this hot stretch to sell, even though he's still hitting under 200, but use the 11 home run month of May to sell for, man, I would take a top 250 guy. I have him, my last update, which was about a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, I threw him, it was really, really low, 335. 329, excuse me. He's 335 now, but I haven't even moved him up because of this. Because I don't believe in it. I just don't believe in him long term. I would take any. He's probably go take like what Chris mentioned. One of the hyped up upside toolsy young guys that are playing in the DSL or a complex level, and see if one of them can rise up rankings. But yeah, I want nothing to do with Aroldis Martinez. So use this hot stretch to sell him because he's just not a major league everyday bat. He's just not.
Yeah, I agree. I've never been an Aroldis fan, and probably would take a lot for a mind to change on that, to be honest. It's just a weird profile. But I'm going to probably ruffle some feathers here with this one. It's not going to be popular, but I'm going to suggest that you sell Jordan Lawler in Dynasty. And yeah, I don't think people will like to hear that. He's not been great this year. And honestly, we can make the excuse that he's young in double A, and that's true. Like it's a very fair statement, but it doesn't change the fact that he has an 86 WRC plus right now. It doesn't change the fact that last year in double A, he had a 65 WRC plus. And I think there's just a lot of concerning metrics under the hood also that lead me to be concerned about Lawler. And I was already a bit concerned about Lawler coming into this year based on kind of the numbers said about last year. And I'm looking like it hasn't really improved at all. Like he's honestly not been really hitting, unless you look at like the last 2 weeks in a 33 at bat sample where he's hit 242, but otherwise it's just not improving. He's 303 slug over these last 2 weeks too. So while the strikeouts have gone down, he's just not hitting the ball with authority at all. This doesn't really surprise me. And I tried to like make this known, but it just wasn't like, it felt like it fell on deaf ears a lot. It's like, oh, Jordan Lawler's so good. But last year, I get it. He's young. He was 19 for most of the year. He was 20 for some of the year, but he had a 90th percentile exit velocity of 100.8 miles an hour, which is really, really low. Like, that's not good at all. His average exit velocity was 83.2 miles an hour. He made contact on pitches in the zone at 78% of the time. His overall contact rate was 69.5%. Yes, he doesn't chase often. I like that. I'm encouraged by that. But a 28% hard hit rate. And that was over a full year last year when he performed pretty well. Like, the numbers pretty good all year for him. And this year, it hasn't really got much better. So, yeah, I'm a bit concerned with Jordan Lawler. I'm not going to go like crazy and drop him way down. Like, his contact's at 70% right now, so it's okay. Still not hitting for power. You want to see him be a little more aggressive and swing a little more, honestly. Like, at some points, like, just I don't want to see him chase, but be more aggressive on zone swings. Like, I want to see that at least and see what he can do. But I think Jordan Lawler is still perceived as a top 10 prospect, and that carries a lot of value, and he's got a lot of name value too. I think Jordan Lawler is a top 25 prospect. I'm not overly, and he may bounce back. Like, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that Jordan Lawler is going to stay this bad. He's not going to stay this bad. But what I am telling you is I think he can cash out and get something pretty good for Lawler right now and probably be happier long term. That's what I try to do with him. I try to sell him either for a prospect that's closer to debuting or a piece that can help you win now. I'd be all about that.
Yeah, and I was one that was kind of holding on hope to Jordan Lawler and kept him a bit higher than I probably should. But, yeah, I've dropped him out of my top 10. He's below like Noel V and Westberg and McLean and all them. He's kind of in like that Drew Jones, Jason Dominguez range where it's kind of like there's like a cluster of guys here in my rankings that are like really talented and have shown that at times. But kind of this year, they're a bit they're struggling right now. So these are guys that could all jump back up rankings or even fall even further. So we'll see. But yeah, it's been a bit of a rough year. And it's funny, I was just looking at some of the stat leaders tonight in the minor leagues, and both Aurelvis and Lawler have gone yard tonight. But Lawler's also struck out two times tonight in six plate appearances as well. So he's only hitting 199 on the year. And Aurelvis is now up to 195. So guys hitting well below, league average marks there. So yeah, Lawler's a tough one right now, and hopefully he can turn it around. There's a lot of talent there, but yeah, just definitely trending in the wrong way. And I'm going to end with another kind of, pretty big name in the prospect world. And I don't dislike the profile here, but I'm going with Tink Hentz. I just the stuff is good. And, I was able to see him briefly out in the AFL this year, but I don't know. And we've talked about this before, Chris, how we're not sure this is a starter's profile. Obviously they give him every chance to be a starter, and it's not really a, command and control thing. I mean, command and control is fine. It's probably, right now I'd throw a 50 grade on both probably. It's in that ballpark, and he's got good stuff. A couple good breaking balls, fastball. Though I've seen the velocity on the fastball has kind of been up and down, not very consistent with that. And I don't know where people are getting the 6'1", 175 on Tink Hentz. I would bet every dollar in my bank account right now he's not 6'1". He's probably, like we were saying before we started recording, maybe 5'10". It looks like maybe it's either very deceiving or these numbers are just flat out wrong. But I just feel like there's a lot of reliever risk here that doesn't really get factored into his rankings, and it probably should. And I'm guilty of that as well. I bumped him way too high last year, and he's still top 100, absolutely. But I feel like he's more like back third of the top 100 and not a guy that's top 50 overall. And I moved him right now. I have him at 77 right now, kind of in a similar range to, Mick Abel, Kyle Harrison, arms like that. I think he's definitely right in that. I would take, if you could trade Tink Hentz for one of these guys that are kind of broken out this year that were, decent names, but have really jumped up to the top 100, Brian Wu, I would take Brian Wu right now. I would take Ben Brown. Probably too late to do that on AJ Smashava at this point. I would take Emmett Sheehan. Those are the three big ones right now that I think you could probably get if you offer it, and maybe even get a secondary piece or a draft pick or something, because I think the perceived value of those guys is not on Tink Hentz's level yet, and I think it definitely should be. And I think they're safer arms. They are closer. To all three of those guys could debut this year. Ben Brown probably debuts within the next month or two. Sheehan maybe later next year, if not, first half of next year. And then Brian Wu, kind of similar, could be late this year, early next year. So all three guys are much safer, similar upside, and closer. So that'd be a deal I'd look to do for Tink Hentz if I had him in dynasty leagues. But what are your thoughts on Tink Hentz, Chris, before we get out of here? Are you looking to sell him as well?
Man, I'll tell you, he's a tough one. He's so athletic. Like, the frame gives me concerns. Stuff's really good. He's been babied, which is some of my concern. Like, he did throw four innings just a couple days ago, which was encouraging. But, he was used as a reliever in the AFL, strictly a reliever. Yeah. And I get it. He's starting now. He started every game this year. He's been hurt some, so he's missed time. But I don't know. I'm not as high as some people, even though I do like the athleticism with him. I like this stuff a lot. And I mean, the fastball curve combo is really, really good. But even the changeup is pretty good.
Yeah. The curveball is right. It's a beautiful curveball. I love this curveball.
The command concerns me and the frame concerns me, honestly.
Yeah. I think The upside's there, but also I think the floor is lower. So that's why I'd rather go after like one of those three arms, like the Wu, Sheehan, or who's the other one I mentioned? Wu, Sheehan. Oh, Ben Brown. And maybe even a Carson. Would you take Tink Hens or Carson Wisenhahn right now, Chris?
I have him like right in the same tier.
Yeah.
So it's pretty close.
I mean, again, Wisenhahn, you know, I have Hens ahead, but yeah. If I can get Wisenhahn and then like a, maybe another back end top 200 piece or something like that. Maybe like a low level upside guy to go with it. I probably would because again, Wisenhahn closer, safer. Maybe doesn't quite have the upside of Hens, but I don't think the upside is that far off. So I mean, probably another deal that I'd look to do if possible. So I think this because of the perceived value and some of these other guys that you could trade Hens for have the perceived value being lower. I think that's a pretty good matchup right there for sure. But all right, I think it's going to wrap us up though. So a lot of fun names again. So you never want to like look to sell your players, but that's part of fantasy for sure. Yeah. But thank you to all the listeners for tuning in again this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to check out both of our personal platforms for more work from each of us, and join us again next time. But until then, everyone, take care.